Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Now it's time for one of our in-depth investigative reports. Diet, injections, and injunctions will combine from a very early age to produce the sort of character and the sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable, and any serious criticism of the powers that will be coming, it will be psychologically impossible to change. Even if all are miserable, all will believe themselves happy because the government will tell them they are so. Bertrand Russell, from The Impact of Science on Society in 1953. How prophetic. Most Americans barely know what comprises the foods they consume daily. In the case of bioengineered ingredients, we don't know because foods are not labeled. Tens of millions of dollars are spent by big agricultural corporations such as Monsanto to assure that genetically engineered corn and soy, now present in the majority of non-organic products, will never be labeled. The American farmlands continue to remain the bastion of Monsanto's agricultural empire. Corn is America's single largest crop and 88% genetically modified. This is the staple food for most of the nation's livestock and the manufacture of high fructose corn syrup. In addition, 93% of America's soy and approximately 60% of sugar beets are genetically modified. These are astounding figures, and it's rather remarkable that a single corporation, Monsanto, has managed to achieve such crop dominance in less than two decades. The immoral stories of criminal activities, lobbying, deceptive public relations campaigns, covert meddling in national politics and policies, scientific misinformation campaigns, and much more have been repeated by many corporations in America, including those in the agricultural cartel groups. It is the reason why the companies frequently appear on the top worst and even most evil corporate polls. However, the darker side of the deep state collusion between U.S. presidencies and big agricultural giants during the past 22 years, which accounts for the rapid expansion of the GMO pesticide paradigm well beyond U.S. borders, remains relatively unknown. The new Green Revolution, driven dictatorially throughout the world by the U.S. government's economic harmonization plots, Monsanto and the industrial agricultural cartel, and Bill Gates' fortune is poised for a perfect storm of expensive and perhaps irreversible agricultural collapse, in my opinion. The GMO genie is fully unleashed, its container shattered. Already fields and farmlands of native crops are rapidly becoming contaminated by the genetic drift of GMO pollen. Small farmers in the developing world who bought the Monsanto GMO myths are increasingly enslaved to debt and falling into poverty. While this may serve as a boon for big ag in its war against traditional agricultural practices and organic farmers who refuse to submit to the GMO doctrine, the loss of every native farm to big ag is another loss in crop biodiversity. Arable fertile soil is lost, and there is further depletion of water resources. This has led to weaker plant resilience that jeopardizes agricultural sustainability when climate conditions and rising pesticide-resistant organisms, as predicted, reach higher extremes. With the exception of several developed nations, the United States stands opposed to the majority of the environmental community that disagrees with the storyline that GMOs are the silver bullet to assure food security. It does not, for a growing global population expected to rise to 9 billion in the very near future. In the United States, the wholesale assimilation of Big Ag's corporate agenda into Washington's domestic and State Department politics of harmonized trade is now complete. The result has been the economic cannibalization of small sustainable farmers, massive tax dollar subsidies to seed corporations, and flagrant disregard to dire warnings from environmentalists, independent agriculture scientists, and climate change proponents. How do we reach this dangerous impasse of irresponsible, reprehensible, and in my opinion, inhumane agricultural denialism that threatens the world's food safety, crop resilience, healthy, sustainable traditional and organic farming, and food security? What chain of events brought about our government sacrificing its soul to jeopardize America's food supply in order to serve the private agricultural industry's complex financial greed? And who wags whose tail? Or has Washington and Monsanto now become a single, two-headed, chimeric beast? Monsanto's tentacles sink deep into the American politic. Today, the company remains optimistic that its strategic goals of global food domination will be achieved through Washington's domestic and foreign policies. During the run-up to the 2000 presidential elections, a Monsanto in-house newsletter dated October 6 stated, quote, agriculture biotechnology will find a supporter occupying the White House next year regardless of which candidate wins the election in November, end quote. And this has been true for each party's lead candidates in every presidential runoff before and after the 2000 election. And since the 1992 presidential election, Monsanto has succeeded in purchasing presidents and politicians and today dictates national food security and agricultural trade policies out of the White House. Former Monsanto attorney Michael Taylor is frequently singled out by GMO opponents as the wicked priest behind the first genetically modified commercial product released on the public, the recombinant bovine growth hormone, or BGH. And before and after BGH approval, Monsanto was a heavy promoter of just this. FDA scientists who voiced opposition were either reprimanded or fired. U.S. government aid to third world nations are largely Trojan horses of GM seed and pesticide charities with stringent economic conditions threatening nations' domestic food security. For example, the Iraq invasion was followed by widespread GMO infiltration disguised as national restoration. And as with all things marked with Monsanto and U.S. government's footprint, the executive branch remains silent because Monsanto is the government, and vice versa, in my opinion. Curiously, Michael Taylor reappears early in the Barack Hillary White House, just as he did in the start of Bill Clinton's first term. When Obama appointed Taylor to serve as America's food safety czar at the FDA, non-GMO farmers, environmentalists, food advocates, and the nation's health-conscious community were outraged. During his presidential campaign, Obama had promised to label genetically modified products. He made the promise, but like all others, he broke that promise. Repeatedly, he voiced the mantra to lessen the illegitimate power of Wall Street and the too-big-to-fail corporations and return legitimate power back to Main Street. Aside from lame public relations stunts to plant an organic garden at the White House, the American people got neither. No GMO labeling and no empowerment of Main Street. So when Obama brought Taylor back to Washington, appointed other Monsanto lackeys such as Tom Vilsack as Secretary of Agriculture and Big Ag lobbyist Islam Siddiqui as the nation's agricultural trade representative, and an additional dozen or more Big Ag shills into his administration, the gig was up, the lie was exposed. Obama revealed his true worth, and it wasn't in the interest of his popular electorate. Instead, Obama's appointments singled a categorical betrayal to America's small farmers and environmental patriots dedicated to protect and preserve America's landscape. its farmlands and America's legacy of small, sustainable farms that responsibly steward the country's farmlands to make the U.S. agriculture the envy of the world, had a stake driven through their hearts, care of Obama and Big Ag. Coming off his stint as Monsanto's vice president of public policy, the appointment of Taylor as deputy commissioner of food and veterinary medicine indicates that Obama never held any sincere intention to label GMOs nor promote organic farmers and safe organic food to begin with. Obama created this new position exclusively for Taylor, as well as a new Office of Food at the FDA in August 2009. As Deputy Commissioner, Taylor is responsible for America's food safety and the labeling of foods, including nutritional supplements. Jeffrey Smith, founder of the Institute for Responsible Technology, wrote in the Huffington Post that this Monsanto supplicant is, quote, the person who may be responsible for more food-related illness and death than anyone in history, end quote. Certainly, Taylor has been the most greasy Monsanto insider to repeatedly slip and slide through the revolving door between the private agricultural industry and Washington. However, it is Bill and Hillary Clinton who are responsible ultimately for inviting Monsanto into government and unhinging the floodgates of genetic engineering across the planet. The future plagues and crisis of environmental destruction, forthcoming systemic collapse of farms due to uncontaminated GMO monoculture, such as the failure of GMO corn yields now being witnessed in the Philippines, where 270,000 family farmers are facing severe drought and poverty and a myriad of genetically engineered diseases, or what are called GEDs, directly associated to human and animal GMO consumption, Monsanto's glyphosate and other toxic pesticides properly belong on the Clintons' shoulders. No other modern political leaders have so been befriended and advanced Monsanto and Big Ag's global agendas than this oligarch husband and wife duo. Rather, they are the tandem foremost responsible for the epidemic of food-related illness and death. The Clinton honeymoon with Monsanto and its major corporate legal allies goes back to their Arkansas days in the governor's mansion while incubating their careers for an entrance upon the world stage as global leaders. In 1977, Hillary Clinton became a partner in Little Rock's Rose Law Firm. The firm would become a pivotal launching pad for the convergence of industrial food and agricultural giants such as Monsanto, DPNL, the creators of the Terminator gene later purchased by Monsanto, Tyson Foods, and the nation's largest food retailer, Walmart. Before her march to Washington, future partnerships and advisories were sealed, and Big Ag would become a leading Clinton major supporter. Under Clinton, Michael Taylor implemented Monsanto's sorcery to devise the false doctrine of sustainable equivalence, thereby ruling that studies to confirm GMO seed health safety are unnecessary. Taylor forced the approval of substantial equivalence through federal trade channels in order to avoid the FDA's scientific review and scrutiny. In the meantime, President Clinton attempted his own misinformation campaign to cheat Americans' assurances about authentic organic food. Following the approval of the genetic engineered synthetic BGH, he attempted to conceal it under, quote, organic label. Fortunately, food safety, agriculture, and environmental advocates discovered the fraud and stopped the effort. His administration made endeavors to relabel irradiated food fertilized with municipal sewage sludge as organic. Although the FDA refused Clinton's initiatives, Monsanto still emerged the winner after Clinton's FDA refused to require labeling of milk containing BGH hormones. Following reports that this synthetic hormone was causing widespread illness and death among dairy cows, and a 1996 scientific press conference associated BGH to breast cancer and colon cancers, Clinton's administration ignored public demands to withdraw the bioengineered drug. Today, Australia, Canada, Japan, New Zealand, and all 25 European Union countries ban BGH dairy exports on account of serious health risks. The Clintons' close ties with Monsanto and the agrotechnology industry were also evidence when the administration made efforts to scuttle international negotiations for the ratification of what is called the Cartagena Protocol on biosafety. The protocol is based upon the precautionary principle and the scientific evidence that there remain many uncertainties about the impact of GMOs on health and the environment. It was therefore intended to regulate and provide greater regulations over trade in living modified organisms, including bioengineered GMOs. The protocol went into effect September 2003, and as of June 2015, 170 countries have ratified the international agreement, minus the United States of America. As Vice President Al Gore flirted with the Big Agri Gang, in 1998, the Environmental Working Group, a public advocacy and research organization, singled out Gore for the Clinton administration's reneging on his promises to better regulate and reduce pesticide use. When the EPA threatened to curtail highly toxic and lethal organophosphates, Al Gore sided with big agri lobbyists and muzzled the EPA. This is Mr. Environmentalist? I think not. But don't tell that to the corporate left or the corporate liberals. They love Al Gore. It was also Al Gore who closed the deal with French Prime Minister Lionel Jospin to permit Monsanto's GMOs to enter French soil after efforts by Madeleine Albright, U.S. Trade Representative Charlene Barshefsky, and Bill Clinton himself had failed. Since leaving the White House, Bill Clinton continues to partner with the industrial agricultural complex. His foundation received over $1 million from Monsanto and up to $5 million from Dow Chemical, the manufacturers of the genetically modified Agent Orange corn with 2,4-D herbicide. In October 2013, a Monsanto press release announced the firm's partnership with the Clinton Global Initiative to investigate technologies to save honeybees, primarily through improved honeybee nutrition and new methods to fight varroa and pathogenic viruses rather than heating. Independent scientists call for an urgent reduction and a halt to toxic pesticides, showing repeatedly they contribute to beehive collapse. Monsanto and the U.S. government have been soft, real soft, stepping the epidemic of honeybee hive collapse for years. In May of 2013, Russian President Vladimir Putin warned John Kerry, Secretary of State, that the Obama regime's protection of Monsanto and Syngenta will lead to, quote, bee apocalypse that will likely lead to world war. Minutes from the heated Kerry-Putin meeting shows the Russian leader outraged at Obama's refusal to discuss such an important global issue that threatens human life on the planet. Following the catastrophic Haitian earthquake in 2010, taking the lives of upwards of 316,000 people, a textbook example of shock doctrine principles to capitalize on a national calamity presented Haitian farmers with a gift of 60,000 sacks of genetically modified Terminator corn seeds, which undermine the fabric of Haitian farmers' seed-saving practices with their own corn. Hillary then's chief of staff, Cheryl Mills, and now legal counsel for Hillary's presidential campaign, praised Obama's rescue mission as a success of humanitarian aid diplomacy. But Haitians would have none of it. Farmers rejected the 475 tons of seed. And we can thank President Obama, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and Monsanto for their efforts of trying to put genetically modified seed, including Terminator seeds you can only grow once, into such a devastated and vulnerable place. A similar situation unfolded in the aftermath of the 2010 catastrophic Pakistani floods that displaced 20 million people, opening up an opportunity for big ag giants Monsanto, DuPont, Dow, and BASF to rush aid to the country through Obama's USAID. The public relations spun images of humanitarian aid. However, these corporations' real intentions were to radically alter the future of Pakistan's agriculture base by introducing GMOs and chemical-based agriculture. Following the severe floods across Malawi in 2004, Monsanto dashed to the rescue. Today, under Obama, Malawi is home of Monsanto's primary African strategic base, with funding from the U.S. government and the World Bank to coordinate the push for GM seeds, pesticides, and chemical fertilizers upon the African continent. And while food safety and security will eventually sink even further during the Bush-Obama administrations, Clinton is ultimately responsible for trumpeting the GMO age that now threatens agriculture, food sustainability, bee colonies everywhere from collapsing. That's all on Clinton's shoulders. However, far more calculating and cunning to transform GMOs into an economic weapon of foreign policy by the expansion of U.S. imperialism has been Bill's wife Hillary in her climb up the political ladder. So let's now take a look, a careful look, at Hillary Clinton and the ascendancy of the turmeric beast. Monsanto's historical legacy discloses the company only wins when it plays dirty. Dirty players attract dirty friends and seal dirty partnerships to advance and propagate dirty work. And when you're really dirty and determined to rise to the top, only the filthiest will satisfactorily pave the way. But the ascent comes at an economic and moral cost. On equal footing is the lesser-known firm Burston Marsteller. There is a deep relationship between Monsanto and Burston Marsteller. There's a similarly lasting connection between this public relations firm Burston Marsteller and the Clintons. Burston Marsteller is one of the world's largest public relations firms, infamous for designing and manipulating propaganda and public perceptions to manage crisis and conceal the full extent of corporate negligence and crimes committed by major private companies and despotic governments. The Clintons' relationship with Burston Marsteller goes back to Arkansas. Burston Marsteller's former worldwide CEO, Don Baer, would serve as Bill Clinton's communications director in the White House. The PR firm undertakes assignments to whitewash corporate and government malfeasance and sins from the public's eye. These have included Union Carbide's responsibility for the Bhopal disaster, support for the brutal Stalinist regime in Romania, counseling the Indonesian government on a phony human rights image following the massacre in East Timor, citizens by Indonesian troops, the Nigerian government to discredit the Biafra genocide, and the developing public relations campaigns against Argentina dictator Videla, who was responsible for the disappearance of 35,000 opponents and civilians. Burston Marsteller's corporate and private clients have included the private mercenary firm Blackwater, the Saudi royal family, Exxon following the Exxon Valdez oil catastrophe, Philip Morris and the tobacco cartel, Pete Peterson's Fix the Debt AstroTurf. The PR firm loves nuclear power. It handled GPU's energy public relations after the aftermath of that company's Turmoil Island meltdown. A near meltdown, and the list of the owner of one of America's most hazardous, unstable nuclear power reactors at Indian Point, that's just outside of New York City, Energy, as a client. Monsanto is also a longtime Burston Marsteller associate and client. It handled Eli Lilly and Monsanto's public relations image to promote GBH, growth bovine, or the bovine growth hormone. The company also represents the interests of the Alliance for Abundant Food and Energy, an industry front organization that includes Monsanto and DuPont, with a mission to distort the perception that bioengineered crop-based biofuels interfere and threaten food production and supply. Burston Marsteller has orchestrated pro-GMO campaigns on behalf of Monsanto to lessen the impact of public outrage against genetically modified products, and its record of corruption, extortion, lobbying, misinformation, distortion of science, and a disastrous environmental legacy by some companies. In 1999, the New York Times reported that Monsanto retained Bursa Marsteller to hire fake GMO demonstrators as agent provocateurs outside the FDA meeting in Washington. In an article published in The Guardian, John Vital wrote, quote, Bursa Marsteller is the company that governments with poor human rights records and corporations in trouble with environmentalists have turned to when in crisis, end quote. However, the greatest threat Bursa Marsteller poses is the simple fact that it's superb at what it does. It's virtually perfect. Over the decades, hundreds of millions of people around the world have been seduced and deceived by the company's manipulation of public campaigns and media messaging in order to erode democracy and discredit independent journalism and threaten the human environmental health of nations on behalf of the corporate and political elite's determination to financially capitalize and exploit populations worldwide. It is therefore not shocking that we would find Bursa Marsteller executives among Hillary Clinton's closest companions and allies. For many years, their CEO at Bursa Marsteller, Mark Penn, has been among her closest friends and advisors. He served as her public relations mentor during her 2000 and 2006 senatorial bids and later as her chief strategist during her quest for the presidency. Between 1994 and 2000, Penn also was her husband's advisor and chief political advisor, and also Tony Blair was advised in his 2005 campaign for prime minister. And while at Bursa Marsteller, Penn was largely responsible for counseling Monsanto on subverting anti-GMO causes, and consumption was therefore not lessened. Consumer protection efforts and aiding the company's misinformation campaigns was terrific. They got their message out. One of Hillary's presidential campaign events was Rural Americans for Hillary, to gain voters from small farming communities. And where her popularity was weak, the irony is that the event was hosted by the lobbying firm Troutman Sanders. And who's the firm's primary client? Monsanto. In reality, the Rural Americans for Hillary initiative was a failed attempt by Monsanto to persuade small farmers to embrace the Hillary camp and then delude them with big agri rhetoric about food safety and the benefits of agricultural technology. Voters in farming states remember this. Candidate Hillary promised to create a centralized food safety department. Lynn Cohen Cole explains that this new department, quote, would bring together a Monsanto-corrupted USDA and FDA, giving Monsanto immensely more power over our food supply, end quote. And this is exactly what Obama founded with his Office of Foods at the FDA, under the control of former Monsanto employees. Cohen Cole further notes that at no time has Hillary spoken in favor of GMO labeling, warned about GMO and glyphosate's health risks to children and pregnant women and family farmers, and GMO and pesticide links to the nation's rise in allergies and cancers. Evidently, Hillary is on the same page with Monsanto's Director of Corporate Communications, Phil Angel, who described the firm's regulatory policy, quote, Monsanto should not have to vouch the safety of biotech foods. Our interest is in selling as much as possible, assuring its safety is the FDA's job, end quote. Now, once in the State Department, Hillary assured the FDA would consistently rule GMOs safe by trafficking Monsanto cronies through the corridors of the Obama administration into head positions at the FDA and USDA. And therefore, it's no surprise that Obama deregulated the approval and fast-tracked GM alfalfa, GM sugar beets, in violation of Supreme Court injunctions prohibiting their approval without an environmental impact assessment. During the Clinton White House, genetic engineering and biotechnology in general were an adolescent science. When Clinton came to office in 1992, the Human Genome Project was in its early years, and a deeper understanding of gene identification and functionality were still emerging. President Clinton created prestigious biotechnology panels of respected academics and emerging business leaders in these new biological sciences to increase their commercial potential in order to retain America's lead in technology and scientific innovation. No one could have imagined that GMOs in industrial agriculture would prove to be a dismal failure and eventually threaten the world's food future security. However, with respect to evaluating the long view as to whether agricultural genetic engineering would evolve into a blessing or a curse once released upon the planet, Clinton preferred illiteracy. He was already markedly indebted to Big Agra's support for his political ambitions. Moreover, it was difficult to imagine that anyone could have accurately anticipated GMO crops would later serve as a powerful economic weapon against all the odds of it being so. Today, the evidence is clear, poignantly found in Monsanto's 2005 Global Marketing Vision document that evaluates the benefits and mission of GMOs solely in dollars and cents, corporate power, and an unquenchable thirst for economic domination. Quote, full adaptation of GMO crops globally would result in income giant gains of $210 billion a year within the next decade, with the largest potential gains occurring in developing countries at a rate of 2.1% of gross domestic product per year. End quote. And that's from Monsanto. Since Clinton left office, Americans are increasingly demanding GMO labeling. This was Obama's promise, but unfortunately, it did not happen. And as a result, today we have enormous amount of toxic pesticides that eliminate pests, that now those pests are developing resistance and contributing to disease, even allergies. The verdict is also clear that GMOs are not substantially equivalent to non-GMOs. You cannot compare a GMO product with an organic product. There's simply no meeting of the minds there. During the past 6 years, Americans are awakening to the contradictions between what President Obama says and promises and what he does. Never in U.S. history have we witnessed a president whose rhetoric and actions are so diametrically opposed. During her tenure as Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton cemented the Monsanto agenda into public foreign policy for America. We may never know the actual concessions agreed upon between Hillary and the newly appointed president in 2008 that eventually led to the Monsanto takeover of the government's food regime. Either Obama, characteristic to his other betrayals, intentionally deceived voters, or else he swallowed whole Hillary's bitter GMO pill without moral remorse. If there has ever been a question about the Obama White House's commitment to assimilate the expansion of agriculture dominance through the foreign policy trade harmonization into other nations, we can cast away doubts following Secretary of State John Kerry's remarks to the World Food Prize Award Ceremony, sponsored by Monsanto, while praising Obama's Feed the Future initiative and his more recent formulation and formation of the New Alliance for Food Security and Nutrition, Kerry pronounced, quote, and that's why we are supporting research and development into climate-smart crops that can withstand drought, withstand floods, actually improve nutrition at the same time, and help protect precious national resources. It is simply true that biotechnology has dramatically increased crop yields. It has dramatically decreased loss due to pest and disease, and it allows us to feed more people without converting tropical forests or fragile lands in order to do so. And these crops will allow farmers to reduce their use of pesticides that are now being used, as you know. So we save money, and we save the environment, and we save lives. It is a virtuous circle, end quote. But he continued, quote, President Obama has rallied global leaders to reverse the three-decade decline in agriculture. Last year, President Obama, along with African leaders, announced the formation of the new Alliance for Food Safety and Nutrition, and that is a way to seek to engage the private sector, and it has a goal of lifting 50 million people out of poverty in the next 10 years. And in just the first year of its existence, it has already secured $4 billion in investment commitments, and just as you already see what this is doing in Ethiopia, where I was just there a few weeks ago for the African Union's 50th anniversary. There they are distributing better seeds to about 15,000 maize farmers, and that will potentially increase their productivity by 50%, end quote. All sounds good, doesn't it? Save the world, feed hungry people by the millions. What could possibly go wrong? Kerry's speech referencing GMOs and industrial agricultural benefits are textbook Monsanto propaganda. In my opinion, they do not stand up to independent scrutiny and scientific evidence. After John Kerry's career might seem distant to GMO debate, his support and relationship to Big Ag is not innocent. Regardless of Kerry's past senatorial expertise in international affairs, Obama required a trustworthy pawn representing Monsanto's agricultural agenda to fill Hillary's shoes. Therefore, we discover Kerry voting against Senator Barbara Boxer's 2004 bill to label GMOs. And during his own run for the presidency, one of Kerry's three largest corporate donors was the law firm Mintz, Levin, and Cohen, which specializes in biotechnological law and includes Monsanto among its important clients. With Hillary resigned from the Obama administration, the president and his new Secretary of State continued her lead to further Monsanto's march towards a genetically engineered apocalypse. Obama has refused to take a determined stand on GMO labeling debate, preferring to prosecute and procrastinate on his campaign guarantee while silently advancing Big Ag's mission of global food domination. Among his executive gifts to the GMO industry are Feed the Future. In 2010, Hillary's Department of State and U.S. Agency for International Development reinvigorated the Feed the Future initiative. Launched at the end of the Bush administration, she expanded the U.S. aid program to partner with developing countries and to serve as a vehicle to introduce GMO interest. Promoted as Obama's administration's endeavor to tackle the problem of global hunger, poverty, and food security, the initiative's two primary goals are, one, to accelerate agricultural growth, and two, to improve nutritional quality of food to its 19 member nations in the developing world, 12 in Africa. The $3.5 billion initiative, largely paid with U.S. citizens' tax dollars, would offer aid to the world's hunger. On the surface, the initiative appears to be a noble humanitarian effort. However, as with all things Washington, well, you guessed it, the demon is in the details, and again we discover ourselves faced with the specter of Monsanto. Dispersal funds to contingent upon nations embracing agricultural biotechnology and fast-tracking the trade liberalization. The result so far has been roughshod demolition of small local farms. They're gone, and their communities are gone, and widespread economic colonialism of farmland sucking profits back to the Western powers, big agribusiness giants. Private partners such as Monsanto are heavily involved. During his testimony before the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Monsanto's Executive Vice President for Corporate Affairs, Gerald Steiner, stated this clearly after acknowledging Monsanto's commitment to help rural farmers, quote, to double the year yields, end quote, of corn, cotton, and soil. Steiner told the committee, quote, that's why I'm so excited by Feed the Future and its inclusive approach to making measurable and sustainable progress in agricultural development. Monsanto is one of the partners among many, stands ready and willing to contribute to this initiative. I am encouraged by Feed the Future's endorsement of business-enabling policies and by its support for public-private partnerships. Mm-hmm. Good for the partnerships, not good for the natives anywhere. The majority of Steiner's testimony recounts the typical GMO falsehoods and media spin regarding drought resistance, higher yields, water reduction, pest control, and safety. Then you have South Africa 2010 implementation plan. In 2010, the Obama administration launched this plan in cooperation with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Rockefeller Funded Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa to, quote, increase cooperation in GMOs, end quote. By initiatives partnering with major agricultural companies like Monsanto, to support the replacement of small, ecologically sound organic farming with industrial agricultural methods and promote patented seeds, pesticides, and chemical fertilizers. In 2013, the Gates Foundation collaborated with Cargill to push GM soy upon developing nations, particularly in Africa. Cargill is the same company, along with Nestle's and ADM, charged by the International Labor Rights Fund for abetting in the trafficking of the children for forced slavery on cocoa plantations. The African continent frequently suffers from severe drought, and chemical-intensive agriculture has been shown to be especially vulnerable during periods of extended hot, dry weather. A cache of studies, including assessments released by the UN, have shown that native organic farming methods are the sole agricultural approach to deal with drought-related vulnerabilities that will inevitably be brought about by climate change. One simple reason is that natural organic matter is capable of absorbing and storing moisture during extreme hot weather conditions, whereas fertilized intensive industrial agriculture requires substantial more water. The recent National Security Agency reevaluation exposed by Edward Snowden have shed additional light on a dilemma that agricultural regime is undoubtedly aware. The industry is in a race against the full impact of global warming and climate change and knows well its agricultural paradigm is imperiled by pending climate change extremes. According to Snowden, Monsanto is heavily involved in private and government chemtrail operations and is cooperating with a secret GEO engineering laboratory known as the Crown Jewel or MODIB. Why would an agricultural corporation, which tells us incessantly that its GM technology engineers crops that are drought resistant with more bang for your buck for nutritional value and require less dependency on water resources, be deeply involved in chemtrail operations to reduce a warming planet? On the contrary, if genetically modified seeds are all that they're promoted to be, then farmers throughout the world should hasten to Monsanto to get on the action when the environmental stresses of global warming start to peak. And then you have the Monsanto Protection Act. In early 1913, Obama signed Congressional Bill H.R. 933, which included a provision slipped into the bill's Homeland Security section and co-written by Monsanto and Republican Congressman Roy Blunt. The provision effectively prevents the USDA and any federal court from delaying the sale and sowing of GMO seeds, regardless of whether or not sufficient safety and environmental assessment has been scientifically determined. Democratic Senator John Tester stated that all the measure, quote, really assures is a lack of corporate liability. It lets genetically modified crops take hold across the country, even when a judge finds it violates the law, end quote. Now, although Congress ruled to have the provision deleted in October 2013, does not excuse Obama for having authorized the Monsanto rider against the will of 250,000 voters petitioning to have it removed. Then you have the secret free trade partnerships, the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the NAP Partnership. And among Obama's larger state crimes against democracy has been his covert negotiations with over 600 corporate CEOs to finalize and ratify the Trans-Pacific Partnership and its sister, the North Atlantic Trade Pact. Hidden from the constitutional authority of congressional oversight and review, in violation of U.S. law, members of Congress and the public remain in the dark over the full extent of the negotiations and documents being drafted by the White House and its private corporate partners. What has come to light are sections concerning agricultural medicine. Among the provisions are, one, the removal of all bans on GMOs by member nations and outlawing of future bans, and two, GMO labeling will be forbidden. The agreement would systematically bring an end to any grassroots or states' efforts to label genetically engineered foods and products. Three, resistance against GMOs and toxic chemical pesticides would be classified as anti-free trade practices and would result in economic sanctions against national bans. And four, pesticide use would be further deregulated and no longer enforced, thereby enabling the complete freedom of use by the U.S. and its foreign partners to trade food products without hindrance. This last provision would be disastrous to food safety and human health because produce could be laced with outrageously high levels of toxic pesticides such as Monsanto's glyphosate. It is difficult for any rational person to observe an iota of wisdom in the Trans-Pacific Partnership's agriculture rules unless we entertain motivations of global food domination. Documents released by WikiLeaks in 2011 have unveiled many U.S. government cables proving that the State Department advances GMOs on behalf of Monsanto and other GM seed corporations. Hillary has been a strong supporter of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, although she claims to have no direct involvement in the secret negotiations. According to WikiLeaks revelations, Hillary Clinton's top aides were deeply involved, including Deputy Secretary of State James Steinberg. Hillary has consistently favored the oligarchy over the rule of the people. Her State Department contributed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. David Sorda has stated where attempts to, quote, empower corporations to use international tribunals to attempt to overturn public interest laws. And also, in conclusion, after scouring thousands of cables from the Bush and the start of the Obama State Departments, Food and Water Watch concluded that rather than advancing the ideals of democracy and freedom, the U.S. government functions as the agricultural industry's most valuable lobbyist to promote GMOs as foreign policy to the rest of the world. Among the cables was one from the U.S. Embassy in Paris, recommending that the U.S. generate a retaliation list of European countries opposing genetically modified crops for a possible trade war. While the majority of the cables originate during the Bush years, this trend has continued and deepened since Obama took office. Now other maneuvers and schemes to push death seeds around the world have been conceived. Obama came to Monsanto's rescue to support the ousting of Paraguay's populist president, Fernando Lugo. Elected as a champion of small farmers and land rights against Paraguay's tight right-wing political cult of wealthy elite and landowners, Lugo's National Service for Plants and Seed Quality and Health fervently opposed the approval of Monsanto's GM seeds. The majority of Paraguay's arable land is owned by a mere 3% of the population who side with Washington's free market neoliberalism. American administrators favor small, wealthy family elites in developing countries because they have historically been loyal and the most subservient to the Washington consensus. Writing for the World Socialist Web, Seamus Cook wrote that Lugo's crime was having, quote, turned left away from corporate interest towards Paraguay's poor. Past U.S. administrations have shown repeatedly they don't give a damn about the poor. They despise the poor and the means by which the poor empower themselves to challenge the tyranny of wealth and power and economic exploitation. And this includes the world's rural farmers who rely upon the traditions of native farming practices to feed their communities but don't provide revenues to corporate gluttons in the American agricultural industry. In conclusion, among the more recent and insidious operations has been the rise in cyber warfare against GMO opponents' websites in recent years. In an article appearing in the journal Sustainable Agriculture under Obama's watch, the U.S. government's intelligence and spy agencies and U.S. military have supported Monsanto's efforts to track and target anti-GMO campaigns and independent scientists. The scheduling of viral cyber attacks against targets such as Friends of the Earth, the German Environmental and Natural Protection Association, GM Watch, in the UK, have been strategically timed immediately prior to the release of major press releases and reports providing evidence of GMO's lethal human and environmental risks. The incidence of cyber attacks were especially high following the publication of Dr. Cerellini's research paper, which scientifically overturned Monsanto's GMO maize safety trials that proved consumption of GM corn directly contributed to the dramatic rise in cancers and tumors in rats. However, it is uncertain whether the computer viruses originated from federal U.S. agencies or who they originated from. Yet given all that we have learned from Glenn Greenwald's reports about the content of the Edward Snowden documents, it is my personal assumption on this that Obama's National Security Agency and intelligence operations are supporting all of the GMO companies, or at least those that they are favored to, against any activist, any scientist, any journalist, any environmentalist that dare challenge them. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you for listening to a special in-depth investigative report on the GMO, Monsanto, and Hillary Clinton connection. A reasonable case can be made that the Obama White House is actively engaged in stealth, covert activities to dump genetically modified seeds illegally into countries that either ban GMOs or limit their use. And according to Miriam Mayet at the African Center for Biosafety, South Africa, quote, dumping GM corn into other countries, disrupting local markets and undermining the livelihoods of family farmers there. As a result, Zimbabwe has imposed a ban on GM corn imports, and Kenya, which has a bumper crop of GM-free corn and doesn't need imports, is now grappling with massive illegal and unwanted shipments of 280,000 metric tons of GM corn from South Africa. A handful of powerful agribusinesses' obsession with GM is pitting African countries against each other, and the international grain traders reaping the benefits and ordinary farmers losing out, end quote. Earlier under President Bush's watch, Monsanto was caught with putting their different cottonseed, the Bolgard cottonseed, originating from South Africa into Indonesia, and that represented in the minds of many a scandal. But they had the power to do so. When Obama leaves office, his presidency may be remembered as the completion stage for the corporatization of the White House. Although the trend of government-serving corporate economic pursuits has been with us throughout most of America's political history, during Obama's term, we have a clear example of what transpires when the DNA of private greed and power recombines with the means of electoral government. What bank, corporation, or industry, empty of any moral rectitude and addicted to growth by any means and wealth accumulation, would refuse the full backing of the federal government's foreign affairs, intelligence, and military to expand its reach? So in the case of the GM companies, we now have a living example of the kind of monster created when government and a corporation becomes inseparable, and we can thank President Obama for revealing to us what such a monster is capable of. In late June of 2015, Hillary Clinton presented the keynote lecture at the Biotechnology Industry Organization's annual convention in San Diego. If there were any questions about where Hillary stands on the issue of GMO safety and big agriculture's promises, her speech dispels all doubts. In her words, big agricultural, quote, seeds and products have a proven track record, end quote. Speaking about her Feed the Future program, Hillary revealed just how deeply her State Department was involved in promoting GM corporate interest. She told the biotech executives that she has, quote, promoted them, meaning GM seeds, all over Africa, and is trying to help the farmers be educated enough to know that drought-resistant seeds, for example, are not going to hurt them. This is painstaking work. You have to be working at the top with governments of agriculture, departments of agriculture, with finance ministries, with prime ministers and presidents' offices. You have to be working from the bottom up, end quote. Recognizing the increasing public blowback her friends and allies at different GM companies face, Hillary donned her Burston Marsteller experience to counsel industry leaders on promoting GMOs in a more positive light. Quote, genetically modified sounds Frankensteinish, she stated. Quote, so how do you create a different vocabulary to talk about what it is you're trying to help people do? In a lot of the political debates in other countries about whether or not to accept certain kinds of seeds, she said, and yes, and then she suggests how to do it, how to accomplish it. Hillary's speech also confirms the many years of hypocrisy in the Clintons' personal lives. While Hillary, along with Bill Gates, Maybe Monsanto's favorite celebrity policymakers don't expect to find GM foods in the Clintons' kitchen. According to Walter Scheib, the executive chef in the Clinton and Bush White Houses from 1994 to 2005 and the author of White House Chef, whenever possible, the Clintons would feast only on organic produce. Food was purchased from local providers and growers, and the White House rooftop garden, although not formally certified organic, was pesticide and herbicide free. Independent journalist Stephen Ledman commented that, quote, what they, the Clintons, want the rest of us to eat is another story, especially if Hillary's elected president in 2016, end quote. A matter we should be deeply concerned with is whether or not it is the responsibility of our nation's State Department to represent corporate interests that the majority of American people oppose and believe threaten both base domestic and international interest. 93% of Americans now demand the labeling of genetically modified foods. Hillary now seeks the White House, and Americans who refuse the GMO regimen need to be aware of her campaign promises. During the course of her 2016 run for the presidential office, voters in Iowa, the nation's leading corn producer, have duly dubbed her the Bride of Frankenfood. In unusually high numbers of leading captions during her campaign have either direct or close ties to Monsanto. For example, Mark Elias, Hillary's general counsel, is an attorney for Perkins Coal, which has represented Monsanto legal cases, including the Pioneer DuPont Monsanto GM corn patent controversy and the Missouri town of Ferguson's liability lawsuit against Monsanto for toxic chemical dumping and poisoning. Then you have the independent lobbyist Jerry Crawwell, runs Hillary's Ready for Hillary super PAC. Although Monsanto denies it, according to legal filings, Crawford's only lobbying client has been Monsanto since 2009. John Podesta, a Washington insider and Bill Clinton former chief of staff, is Hillary's current campaign chairman. And although not having a direct tie to Monsanto, his brother Tony is the founder and chairman of the Podesta Group, a lobbying firm representing Monsanto and contributing to Hillary's PAC. LaDevia Drain, a former executive director of the Congressional Black Caucus, was brought into Hillary's campaign to steer strategies for targeting black voters. Drain is a former junk food lobbyist for the Grocery Manufacturers Association and has in the past worked towards banning GMO labeling. And as Hillary's financial advisor and fundraiser, Dennis Cheng served as Clinton's foundation chief development officer, getting funding from Fortune 500 companies, including Monsanto. How do we sever Big Agri corporate's head from the Washington big agricultural beast in order to restore constitutional national integrity to the U.S. government? We should remind ourselves that the American people are ones who have a capacity for freedom of choice. And also, we should demand labeling of all GMO foods. And until that is done, we will always be at risk of eating something that may be genetically engineered, and we won't know it. In addition, never has industrial chemical agriculture been shown to reduce water usage. To the contrary, it sucks dry far more water resources because the entire big ag model is based upon soil degradation and chemical fertilizer supplementation. GMOs have now been categorically proven to be substantially non-equivalent to non-GMOs. Nutrition value in GMOs is far less than an organic counterpart. In fact, genetically modified crops are contributing to higher malnutrition while also weakening people's immune systems. Quantitative analysis shows GMOs are less healthy with higher levels of sugar, such as glucose, fructose, and sucrose. They are less nutritious with lower levels of vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and other phytochemicals compared to their organic counterparts. And finally, university and laboratory studies from around the world show that fresh vegetables and grains heavily dosed with some of the most poisonous chemicals on the planet contribute to a multitude of diseases and defects. The good news is that the risks to the environment and human health are no longer a tightly kept secret between the government and agricultural complex. Increasingly, other foreign governments and citizens are awakening to the deception and lies behind these GMO company promises and their pesticide propaganda. Today, over 25 countries have banned GMOs. In the United States, more states are introducing GMO labeling bills to impede the power and deceptive public relations in scientific falsehoods. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you very much for listening.